Welcome to Making Comics, a podcast exploring the comics process from two different perspectives. I'm Keith Foster. I write the comic Kadoja and the upcoming comic Three Protectors.
And I'm Scott Loss, the creator and artist of The Second Shift and Wanderers of Melisandre for The Accidental Aliens. I almost forgot for a second. I was like, wait, what's my other book?
What am I doing?
Who am I?
What do I create? Exactly. Why am I? Why is Gamora?
Great line.
Yeah, exactly. All right, man. So notice that, like, the listeners out there will know that, like, our prep for this is just I rolled right into the fact that I was hosting this week because that is how on the ball we are. So you want to do beers first? You're shoving the beer in the camera right now.
Yeah, man.
So that makes me think that you want to talk about what you're drinking.
I'm getting it ready for the photo. So,
is that what it is?
Yeah. I got mine set up. You know, I'm going to take a quick hit. That is very interesting. It's called Tiki Time. I don't see the brewer, but it's a tropical wheat with passion fruit, orange, and guavas. It's a 6.5. Not too shabby.
Okay, gotcha. This bad boy is something called Doom Tree. And it's essentially like a lager with some lemon zest in it. It looks like it's made wilderness beer, Fanta Flora and Wilderness. So some stuff I got from Tavor.
Okay.
We're recording later. I was so ready. I was so ready to break out a bourbon barrel stout. But I'm just like, I do not want to get that smashed this late in the evening by my standards. I don't want to be up all, like, at my age, what it is, it's about, I don't want to get woken up, I guess, or woke up or whatever by the fact that, like, my stomach's giving me fits because I drank something all heavy and crazy, you know, without enough time to do digestive stuff. So this is 50, ladies and gentlemen, for all of you out there that are just can't wait to get to 50, or 50 is something in the distant future to you, I'm giving you a Ghost of Christmas Future on it right now. It's a fantastic time.
Keith's trying to stay woke. Or not stay woken in this case.
I'm not staying. It's actually just, it's woken. I'm not, and using bad verb tenses, I think, too. So, all right, that said, you get to go first this week, man. So in the review, what was the first thing you did this week, man?
So I've really been hammering home the Drawtober, you know, continuing from last week. I really am jamming on it. It has I laid the whole story out. Everything is ready to roll for October. But I like to work a little ahead because time is precious. And this stuff, it's once you feel it, once you feel that creative bug, you want to keep that thing rolling. So in the little thumbnail stage, so I mentioned part of the Slack method is laying things out on one sheet of paper, in my instance, digital paper. So I'm working on 8 images at once. And so it's great. I'm just tackling the first 8 days and just kind of like filling everything in, working out working the figures out. And it's going really great. I'm really loving it. So the day of, all I'll have to do is ink, you know? It's just like I'm getting the pencil stage done now. And that way, these things will roll out every day without fail. And that's what you want, you know, like Inktober or Drawtober. I don't know if I said Inktober initially. Sorry, I meant Drawtober. I don't do the Inktober because of all the hubbub that came with it. And
still a year later, remember, we're coming up on our first lap here, by the way.
Oh,
this is episode number 46, which means that we are essentially 6 weeks away from our 1 year doing this bad boy.
Oh,
and,
that's awesome.
And that means that we're, like all of a sudden we're talking about Drawtober again, right? Or Inktober, or whatever the one you're doing.
Drawtober. No Inktober.
No Inktober.
No.
No, bad Inktober.
Yeah.
Good Drawtober.
That's right. I'm not getting sued. So, you trying to get sued, boy? So, yeah, man, it's really flowing. I'm loving it. The pencil stage on a lot of these days, they're pretty much there, you know, moving on to the next day, and I'm feeling really good about it. So when October rolls around, like, you want to have a successful month of whatever thing you're doing, Inktober, Drawtober, whatever you want to call it, and you want to make sure you hit those deadlines, so it's really important. And, you know, like I had said previously, I'm going to be working on 2 books at once plus commissions, so I'm going to need this part of the month to roll smoothly. So the way to do that is work ahead.
This will air early on in Drawtober. This will air on Monday the 4th. So we're getting it going here, right? So we're going to have a whole lot of updates as we get through this. I expect that this will be a nice through line through the month. And even though you haven't started yet, by the time that this episode comes out, you will have.
Yeah.
So this is a great time to mention that if you're not following Scott on Instagram, throw those Instagram handles out there again.
Yep, at Scott Lost on Twitter and Instagram. So I'll be posting the pieces on both of those. And then if you want to check out my last year's, if you have not picked up Second Shift 11, which is the fully formed comic from the Drawtober pages of last year, you can go on my Instagram, and right at the top of the page there is a saved folder, and it just says Drawtober. So that's last year's. You can go through each of the day. You can see the whole month there.
Nice, nice. All right, man. So you're getting it ready. You're getting it going. And by the time this comes out, you will have started.
Yeah,
so,
man.
Fantastic.
I'm excited.
Man. Awesome.
This day two is the one where I'm like reworking it. That's the one that, like, I did something and I was like, it's fine, but I don't want it to be just fine. I want it to be better than that. So I'll keep reworking that until I get it where I want it. But there were other pages and I just leapfrogged that day and started working on the other ones. And those ones are going swimmingly.
Fuck yeah, man. Awesome. Awesome. So for me, so I have a theme. I have two substantial things, I guess, that I did this week. And both of them have a very common theme. I have mentioned, I believe, on a podcast, if not multiple podcasts before, about that sometimes the most important thing you can do is ram your head against a wall. You know, I'm obviously speaking more metaphorically there, as opposed to literally ramming your head against a wall. But I have equated writing to that. That there's a whole lot about writing where you just show up, right? Like it's the Woody Allen line. 80% of life is showing up, right? Like, do your time every single day, right? So I mean, I've hammered this home, and so both things are really going to come back to that. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about Kadoja Volume 4, Number 1, and this one it isn't as much that I'd been, you know, necessarily banging my head against a wall or anything, but, you know, working through the first issue felt like a little bit of a, it was work, but it was fun work, obviously. That was what I finished, you know, a couple weeks ago. I gave it to Will, so that Will could take a look at it and get some art ideas, which he's done. In fact, on today's Instagram, which is a couple days old when this airs, I posted the first thumbnail for Kadoja Volume 4, Number 1. So that's exciting for me to see and to know that we are beginning the journey of the next issue right now. And I also gave it to Mike so that Mike could proofread it and take a look and see what thoughts he had. So I just got those notes back today. And while most of the notes were small, it was like, cut this line of dialogue here. Some of them were like wording things. He like nitpicked some of my wording, which is kind of funny because it's a comic script and no one's ever going to see it. Like, it's the description that he was nitpicking.
Oh.
which is like, so only me, you, and Will are ever going to see this. I'm not sure why we really need to get too word precise. But anyway, that's fine. Editors edit, right? It's what they do. So, but he came to one thing and I had been a bit of a dipshit. And the thing that I had done was I had wanted to get this to Will because essentially Will now has a deadline. He's going to need to be finished with this issue sometime around November so that he can jump into Goblin 2. And I feel that because I want him to have time to work on this and have the book be great. So I pushed this out to him. And then Mike mentions in the script when he comes back, he's like, you're calling out the panels and things and the shots on page 5, and then you have a whole lot of dialogue and it jumps to page 9. So your boy Keith fucked up because I was supposed to take, it's just a big thing of dialogue that I was then going to turn into, panel direction, panel size, etc. I just didn't get to it because, you know, I'm scatterbrained and I do that sometimes. So I then sent a note back like, oh yeah, this is my bad. I need to revise it. And I'm just going to go through it. Will, if you don't mind, you know, just go ahead and thumbnail everything else except this and save this little scene for last. And I'm going to save the major thing about this change for a future main topic, actually.
Oh.
But what I wanted to mention here is that Mike gave me the note. And then I started to think, like, okay, how do I take this note, right? What can I do? How can I make it interesting? And so in making it interesting, I actually worked my way through a few things that I it's interesting because I started with something that made the scene visually better. It added some tension to the scene visually so that the words and the art are both serving, both doing jobs, right? Which, again, we'll talk about in a couple weeks. And then what happened was all of a sudden I had this moment of revelation where I was like, oh my God, this can happen. And again, I'm not going to give any of it away. I will happily talk about it once the comic book comes out. But all of a sudden that clicked and I was like, yes, yes, this is all going to work now. And more importantly, by this scene working, it makes a through line through volume four way better, way more tense, way more dramatic, and gives a couple characters way more to do. So again, I can't get into specifics, which unfortunately makes the story not as interesting as it could be. But the point is, sometimes you get that note back. And like, this really had nothing to do with Mike's note. Mike just said a certain thing. And I was like, okay, that thing makes sense, which again, I'm going to talk about in 2 weeks. But then when I started to just think another way of doing it, this will all make sense in the future. I just hit on a revelation. And that's a great thought, you know, because sometimes they just happen because you take a small note and then run with it. And then before you know it, you've run 2 miles and you have a way better idea and it's going to make the comic way better. So that's my first thing, man. It was very pleasing to get to a point where, you know, when you write, when you draw anything on either side of comics, the thing that keeps us coming back is that moment where we do something or think of something or draw something or write something. And then we're like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's fucking cool. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like when you get that moment where you're like, man, this makes things work. And from a drawing perspective, it's different than from a writing perspective. From a writing perspective, it's like, wait, this makes this thing work and makes the other thing work better. And everything comes together more cohesively. You know, it reminds me of a line. I may have quoted it before. It's actually in the advertisement for Neil Gaiman's Masterclass. You know, that online thing, Masterclass. And the thing he says in the trailer, the second draft is where you act like you knew what you were doing all along, right? or something like that, right? You revise the first draft and it makes it look like that was your intention the whole time. So this sort of had that. You know, the edit made more sense than the initial thing. But hey, it's all a process, man.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. How many things you got?
I have a second one after this, and that's about it.
Yeah, me too. Okay, cool. That works out. So my second one, super fast, super easy. And so it looks like we'll be moving past this part of the pod pretty quickly. But basically, yeah, it's commission time. So I got a bulk of toy commissions that I have to do. Basically, this is going to pay for Christmas. So I have 9 figures that I have to draw. So that's a substantial amount of work / substantial amount of money. So that'll be awesome. And then the Mermaid Commission, I had gotten a note back what they were looking for. And it was like, I like the background of A, and I like the bottom or the characters of B. And then so I adjusted accordingly. And so it looked pretty good. I added a little bit more detail. I think it really rounds the piece out, so I actually feel better about it. So I basically have the layout done and nothing to do with it, so I guess that's on hold again. So the mermaids, it's taken a holding pattern this year, which is fine. And but I'll be able to focus on those wrestling figures. And I can't say who we landed, but the company I work for, they landed a huge fish. It is like easily the biggest wrestler that I've drawn as a toy to date, and I am a huge fan of this guy, and I can't wait. So I was supposed awesome. I was supposed to start it today. I was actually supposed to start it today, but I was jamming so hard on the Drawtober stuff, and I'm feeling a little under the weather. I had like a bit of a headache, not quite a migraine, but kind of close to it, so I couldn't focus for too long of periods. But when I was drawing, I was doing the Drawtober stuff. So tomorrow I will tackle this, and I'm really excited when this guy gets announced, and I'm going to put that shit up on my page, and I'm pretty excited.
Hell yeah, man. That's cool. Maybe you can tell me once we stop
recording. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. So that's pretty interesting that you, for the mermaid thing, you basically did two things, and he liked one part of one and another part of the other. So it's interesting that it took you two mock-ups to kind of get to the final thing.
Yeah, I gave him three, and he didn't like the third one so much. It was just from a slightly different angle. Honestly, it wasn't much different from the first one. But I tend to give him about 3 to 4 layouts. And since he's, like, I'll see him at shows and stuff, and, like, he'll have other artists just do work at shows, but he likes to give me bigger pieces, so we do it all via email. And so that way, since it's a take-home, it gives me a little more play, and I don't feel the pressure of having to finish it within a night and get it back to him the next day or the day after, depending on how long the con is. So since he allows me that extra time, and they're the big-ticket items, I'll send him about 3 to 4 layouts just to, you know.
Nice.
Yeah. Give him some options
time,
there.
And it uses the time to your advantage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. All right. Very cool. Very cool. So, so my second thing, this is more of the, I'm not going to say banging my head against a wall, but I'm going to give a quick novel update because, so let's just recap the last, let's go with four to six months. I get this feedback back that is, you know, harshly worded, but a lot of it is accurate. I then filter that through my own filter, check it with a few other people as well, and proceed to draft a plan for revising my novel, right? And a lot, one of them was that I need the lead to be a better character, more rounded, more rich. And then another thing was, another note that I took was basically that there was author-constructed weak obstacles that didn't really need to be there. And by removing those weak obstacles, I could put some other things in there that made the novel better, right? Simply by changing the way the character acted and by changing a few other things. So I bring up those things because that is the work that I have been doing for the past, you know, 4 months, maybe more. And to explain the book is essentially told in, let's go with about 11 chapters. Or one more, one less, I don't know. It could get revised, right? As of right now, it's 11 chapters. And so what these last 4 months have been nothing but me starting on page one and giving it that pass with the character's new traits, with what I know about the character, because I invested a lot of time in understanding the character through writing for a month about the character's background, their life. I wrote scenes involving them that'll never make their way to the book. Those kind of things, right? You know, I research stuff, production that the character would have done, right? Like this is a thing that this guy wrote, and I wrote it just so I could see it, right? So, and again, I've mentioned this kind of stuff before. And then all it's been since then is walking through the world with this new knowledge about the character, and also removing the stuff that you can remove because he's a different person. So I mention that because I, for the last week or so, I've been stuck on chapter 8, which is a pretty big chapter. A lot of shit goes down in chapter 8. And the way that the writing has gone the last week, maybe two, maybe three, has been that I write a little bit, revise a little bit, and then I just close my computer laptop screen and I think, it's not right yet. It's just not, you know, I don't like it. But you open it up the next day, and in my case, I edit for the hour, I write for the hour, whatever you want to call it. And then I just keep pecking at it. And so every day for those last 3-4 weeks, it's just been, it gets a little bit better or a little bit less worse is a way of putting it, right? I would just be like, no, I still don't like this chapter in its entirety. Something's off. And then it's just been addressing that something and that something and that something. So about 2 days ago, I finally got to the point where I read through the whole thing again. I'm like, okay, I think we're at the place I like here. I think I'm okay with this. You know, I'm cool with all this. And so all that did was set up this thing where what I wanted to do was all this work I've been doing has been leading me to a spot where I'm now at a point in the novel where some new shit can go down. And where that new shit goes down, I don't know what direction it's going to go in the novel. I have a loose idea. I think I've given the video game world analogy here. There are checkpoints that are going to get hit in the novel that you would, as in solving any video game. I just don't know how I'm going to get there again, right? I have an idea. But I mention that because today, when I did my writing, I got to this scene that was kind of brand new. And I wrote it, and I was like, oh, fuck yeah, man. This is why exactly why I did all this. You know what I mean? It's cool. It's creepy. It changes a lot of shit that's going to happen afterwards. It's a big incident. It's a cool act two moment, you know, to break it down into the acts, the dreaded act in any novel. I don't think comics have this as much, is act two. Act two is the one that's just the nightmare, right? Act one is fun. It's the intro. Act three is fun. It's the climax, the denouement, all that stuff. Act two is the shit that drags and that authors generally just want to punch themselves in the face over, right? So this is a cool moment in act two now. And I'm happy about that. So anyway, I say that to go back to the thing I said at the top of the episode, which is you bang your head against the wall, you bang your head against the wall, and you develop a headache every single day. You're like, my head hurts. Why do I keep banging it against the wall? Because the wall will fall in writing, right? In real life, it won't do that. Do not bang your head against a physical wall, okay? But in writing, every single time, as long as you just show up every day, even if you feel like you're slamming your head against that wall, the wall's going to give. And the wall gave today, right? And so that was what was exciting. And now I'm at this spot in the novel where it doesn't feel like a grind. Like, I'm excited to write tomorrow because now I get to shape this new path of the novel that I've worked so hard at for the past 6 months or so.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's definitely, you also had said there's probably the equivalent in drawing, and that's exactly right. There is, it's pretty much the same thing, you know. There's part of the story, I mean, I guess depending what type of artist you are, I like action. I'm a big action-heavy artist. I'm into fight choreography and all of that. So a lot of times the slower pages are the ones that are, for me, the banging against the wall. You know, you can make them more exciting for you, like I've talked about, by choosing interesting angles and taking a look throughout the room and everything like that. But generally, you know, those are the pages where you're banging your head a little bit. And those are the ones finding those interesting angles. That's how you break through. That's how you knock the wall down, is by finding those interesting angles.
Mm-hmm. For sure, man. And again, we're going to revisit this, that particular part of it, I think, a little bit in 2 weeks when we have our main topic. So, because we are going to, you know, this is a good time to set up since we're through this part of the episode now. It's time to go to our main topic. And this week we're going to talk about covers. And, you know, we're really winding down here. I think we have only two more topics in our kind of beginning to end comic process that's been the last, you know, 6 to 8 episodes or so. So after this, we're just going to find some things of interest, and we're going to try to keep this main topic thing going for as long as we can sustain it. We're going to put some pressure on Huss to have some interesting things to talk about. But so 2 weeks from now, we're set. We already got a pipeline of two nice. Weeks, man. We're rocking it. So anyway, so let's go ahead and talk about covers, man. Go ahead, rhyme off the dome, man. Say whatever you want to say about covers, and then I will chime in as necessary.
So covers is an interesting thing, because I find that in today's comic market, it's usually the most eye-catching, in the sense that it has the vibrant colors, maybe a cool design, and not necessarily what's going on in the book. I find that to be the comic market today, for the most part. I would say the early aughts was group shots, interesting angles, Dutch angles, think Lanil Yu, New Avengers, stuff like that. You just get a lot of those down angle shots. Justice Society, I believe, had a very famous cover like that, which is obviously not in the 2000s, but take that for instance. So in the 90s, it was lots of group shots and semi-action going on, right? And before that, all action and dialogue. Characters talking on the front covers. So through the decades, the covers change. The interest of the comics community changes as time goes on. And I'll say that my interests lie in the 90s style covers. No surprise. I love the 90s. That's what I grew up reading for the most part, you know. Latter 80s stuff, mostly 90s, and I haven't stopped reading since. So when I do covers, the thing I like the most is the cover lets you know somewhat what is going on inside the issue. Those covers can have a fake, where it looks like maybe, oh, these two characters face off in the book, but in reality they don't. They meet up at the end and then they fight in the next issue. Or it is a battle that does take place or whatever. These characters interact and that shows you on the cover. I wasn't a fan, really, of the early aughts when it was just group shots. I don't like that style cover. It's cool here and there. Like, when you got a badass artist that just does a killer group shot, it's like, okay, I'll take that any day of the week. I.e. Second Shift number 8, Brett Booth does this killer group shot of the team. It's just like, yeah, I'll take that any day of the week. But I prefer covers that tell stories. So, you know, it has the villain in it, has whoever the hero is that's facing off against that villain. Those are the types of covers that I prefer. Do you have what's your personal preference?
Yeah, I mean, you've nailed it. In fact, I'm just gonna, this isn't a visual. Maybe someday we'll move to videos and have that. And then forget it. I was gonna say something stupid.
What were you gonna say?
I'm not even gonna say.
Yeah, you tell me later.
Then our fans will drop to zero because they'll see how fucking ugly we are. Look at these hideous fools. Oh. I've been listening to these guys for this long. Yeah, exactly. So I am right there dialed in with you. And when you were talking and breaking it down, it was interesting to listen to because I don't really think about it. I never really thought about it like that. I just think like, yay, cool cover. You know, but you know, because we've been talking about it, and people who do follow me on Instagram know that boy, have I just been on a massive Fantastic Four 70s run here. And that is definitely the, you know, there's something about the cover that is in the issue. There's text, and it's going to say some shit that's about to go down. You know what I mean? So that's the style. I mean, I do like the kind of cover that lets you know something that's going on in the issue. And that is something that Lance did for the first batch of Kadoja covers, right? So once we got into the third Kadoja arc, but actually I take that back. It never has changed. For every one of the 14 main covers for Kadoja that have happened to date, every single one has something to do with something that's going on in the issue, right? Like, and in some cases, it's more thematic. You know what I mean? Like it's a little bit of a different take on something that actually happens in the issue, but it is there.
Yeah.
And the reason it's there is because when Lance was crafting the first 10 covers, he specifically pulls images from the issue and then builds his cover around those images. So a fun game to play is for every one of Lance's, covers, find the page he took it from, because every time there's something on that cover that he took from a page. Which is awesome, awesome game to play. Now, 11 through 14, aka Volume 3, Danny Schlitz and Will actually on the 14th issue. That's a direct thing from the book, but the other ones are more kind of thematic, and it does tell you. So it's a long-winded way of saying I like a comic cover that gives you an indication of something that's going on in the book for sure. You know, group, not group. I'm not as dialed into that. I have a preference in covers, and it is like the aesthetic of the Kadoja covers. I like stark. I like, you know, minimal colors. I like something that really catches your eye. So there's a billion ways to go about that, though.
Yeah, you have quite a few covers that are design-centric. It's just like, oh, that's a pretty badass cover. And it's just like, there is the hot red text, and then you get a pair of eyes or something like that. And there's a simplicity to it. And it's a nice design graphic element going on there. So that's very in tune with what's going on in today's comic scene. So, yeah, definitely an interesting cover. And I think now you're getting a lot of flashback to older stuff as well, because the current creators, a lot of them are fans of the 90s. Like, you know, I'm not alone in that sense. So you do have a lot of covers now that are going back to that era. And I actually skipped one. So, like, where there's the... I think it's more likely the 70s and maybe early 80s that there's actual dialogue on the covers, like 70s and before, basically. And the 80s, I think the 80s is where the group shots really started taking place first. I think that started happening in the 80s. I think Art Adams, you know, stuff like that. Maybe like, you know, 83 throughout the 90s. So, yeah, I love that stuff. I like all of it, really. Like, I'm a big fan. Like, as I've gotten older, I've learned to really appreciate those covers that do have the text on it. There's something special about it. It's just a different era. And you go back and you look at those books, you read those books, you check out the art from those eras. Like, as a young artist, I couldn't tell you how little I cared about the 70s comics and, like, what they look like. I'm like, this is not cool looking at all. Like, 90s is all style, you know? And, like, mm-hmm. so you gotta, you know, even then, though, I'll tell you, like, I didn't understand what older people were talking about when they were like, those books are trash, the writing's no good, there's no, the storytelling's bad. But for me, if you grow up in that era, you can read it just fine because it's what you grew up reading, right? maybe previous generations, there might be a little more hand-holding or just more the traditional sense of storytelling. So, but there, I will say, though, there were a few times where, like, in the 90s, I was like, I have no idea what's going on. I got lost in the weeds here. But anyway, going back to the covers. So I would say those are the covers that I enjoy the most are the ones that tell the story. And, you know, it's all on your personal preference, and it's also on the preference of your artists, you know, like if you're the writer, for instance, you might not have an idea for a cover, and you just let them have at it and see what they come up with, you know, throw some layouts your way and you know, see what you like. But as an artist, you have to really figure out what your personal choice is, what your personal style and preference is. And, you know, it can be as simple as looking at the creators that you grew up, you know, reading, and you'll find that out pretty quickly.
So for me, first of all, to your point just now, as a writer, and I don't know how the other writers are, but I am very involved in some aspect of the cover, you know. So they were covered, like, so when Danny Schlitz did the first three covers for volume three, I'm sorry, and Will Perkins, both of them. Like, I gave them ideas on not necessarily color palette, but color ideas, right? And the kind of thing I wanted. Here's the kind of thing I want. I want, like, one bold, striking image. I want colors that really pop, you know? And in the case of the fourth issue, I actually gave Will some suggestions. I said, any combination of these that works, you just let me know. And then he just went with the one that he felt was the best. But I've found that at least if you can focus it, then, you know, you can go from there, which helps a lot. The cover to any comic needs to be more visually striking than any panel or any page within the comic. I feel like the best piece of art you have needs to be that cover. And even better, if it's better than any of the art you have inside the book, you know what I mean? Like, that is selling the book right there. That cover is going to do so much heavy lifting for you. So for me, you need to make sure that cover's as good as possible and is either A, some representation of the best piece of art that's actually in the book, or B, something that's different but somehow even better or more eye-catching. It doesn't have to be better, but it has to grab somebody's eye as they're scanning the newsstand or walking by you at a convention. They need to be drawn into it.
100% agree with that. Yep, absolutely. I do like to have multiple covers these days. I like to have the main cover, which I do want to be a very striking image that I create, but I also want other artist interpretations, and those are eye-catching to me for a different reason, obviously, because I'm the one usually drawing these characters, drawing the interiors. As much as I do love the 90s, I don't really do 90s style layouts, I find. Like I do focus on storytelling quite a bit. Like, I'm a huge fan of storytelling. Like, and that comes from also my wrestling days. It's like, you're telling a story every match, and I'm telling a story every issue. So that is a very important element to me. So I don't have tons of splashy images. So yeah, the cover tends to be the knockout punch, the one that catches the eye the most. So yeah, I definitely agree with that. Make sure your covers are distinguishable from each other. So, like, they can look at the cover. So if they're a fan of the Second Shift, they can look at each cover and number one, know exactly what issue this is, like, what took place in this issue. It's like, oh, this is the cover because, you know, like for instance, issue two, it's the background. It's like all four characters, they're all in civilian clothes, and each part of the background where their character is positioned is the background of where they work or go to school. So in that issue, you know that they're all at their jobs, that issue. And you'll know that because you've read the issue. So if you're going back and you're looking for something specific, you can go, it's this cover, right? This is the issue right here. And I also want to make sure the cover does not look too much like a previous cover. So, like, issue one and two, they look completely different. Two to three, three to four, four to five, et cetera, et cetera. So they're very individualized, and I like the variation of group shot, single character, fight scene. One of my favorites, close-up face. So this is that's a very 90s cover. Think of Lobo or Pitt, you know, something like that. Like just a giant face on the cover. It's very striking. And there's something about that I really love. And so I actually have different kind of like visions as far as Second Shift and Wanderers go, because Wanderers is more of a manga style comic book and Second Shift is a traditional American comic book, superheroes. So I like the Otomo style, like stark image. It reminds you of a scene in the book, like whatever's going on in the story. And it's just, I don't know, a bit of a still image. There's something about that I really enjoy for Wanderers. And so I kind of stick to that program when it comes to those covers.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. I mean, so on top of that, something that I do, which to your point of kind of visually being able to visually tell the covers apart, is I try to choose a color motif or theme for every arc, right? So the first arc of Kadoja had a lot of brown and burgundy and cream. I think those are the main colors there, you know, kind of that palette. And then the second arc was very red, black, and white, right? In fact, yeah, I don't know if they're right here behind me, some of them, you know, red, black, and white. You can see them right there.
Oh,
there's
okay.
A couple of them right there. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people can just look on my Instagram for them too. And then the third arc, we were going for something really bright and colorful. I'm not a color wheel expert, but I get the feeling that there's some kind of similarity if you were to compare those colors. So I believe the covers were, there's purples, there's teals, there's a kind of a magenta, and there's one that's orange, right? Like, again, I feel like those have similar properties as colors, but maybe I'm crazy and there's no connection at all. They're not primary. Maybe they're secondary. Maybe they're, you know, pull out your first eight Crayola crayons and it's the next eight that you're most likely to get. Like, it's those kind of things, right? I can't formalize it, but it's nice to have those kind of themes. And that's the kind of thing I'm going to think of for, to your point, the main covers of the fourth arc as well. So before I ask this other question, was there anything else you wanted to talk about? Anything, again, not necessarily a rule to give to other people, but something, a guideline you like for yourself?
No, I would say that's about it. Just to vary it up and just kind of, you know, make sure those covers suit your book as well. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to have a cover that's so far away whatever's going on the interiors that it just doesn't match at all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you want it to stand out, but you don't want it to be a false representation of what's going on in this,
right,
that title.
Exactly. And so that kind of leads me to the second thing, which we've both talked about. We talk about a lot, and it's the kind of thing I think people out there who are, you know, who like to support artists are going to think about, which is going to be alternate covers, right? And the kind of things you go for there. So alternate covers, to me, they are no holds barred, all bets are off. You can do whatever you want with them.
Yeah,
and I think that's what's fun. You know, there's a lot to say, but there's not a lot to say. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's fun to go out there and find somebody who can do the cover. Ideally, you want a cover that has nothing to do with the main version of the cover, right? You want something wildly different.
Basically, ideally, the opposite of what I just said.
Exactly.
But
that's okay.
That's right, because, you know, that's why it's an alternate cover, yeah.
Totally. And that's, you know, you can do so many ways there. You can find artists that, you know, like, to cherry pick a few of mine, right? You know, like, I got Jeff Zorno to do one. Jeff Zorno is a well-known horror and Godzilla artist. He's done some IDW stuff for Godzilla and a bunch of other things. He's done a bunch of, like, horror t-shirts. He's badass, right? So he was kind of like my Godzilla celebrity that I got, right? But then, and that was for Kadoja Volume 2, number 1. But then for Kadoja Volume 2, number 5, I got this amazing artist who people might know in California for sure, named Sho Murase. And she does absolutely beautiful, minimalist drawings, and she draws women gorgeous, right? Just draws gorgeous women. And so I was thrilled to get her on one of the covers. And, you know, that was just a style that I liked. And, you know, I was just like, I'm a big fan of your style. You're interested in doing a cover. And you know, so to that, you know, all bets are off. You get to follow your muse on that one, man. You know, you can find people. I mean, I had you recommend a cover artist, and he's the alternate for Kodoja Volume 4, number one. The cover's done, you know, and that's somebody that we both did some work through. So, you know, there's all kinds of ways to go about it.
What was the, you always tell me, and I always forget, the one that had more of a graffiti style kind of, I really dig that guy.
Hell yeah, man.
I think it's a guy, I can't remember
his name. Mr. Ewok 1.
Mr. Ewok 1. That guy, yeah. His art is sick. That's a badass cover.
He is a badass, and I'm happy to say that I think we're going to get him in the future one as well. So he's a monster. And he's a street artist, man. He's got like this huge following of people, and he does street art all the time. Like he's, you know, he's done walls and murals and all kinds of dope shit. And so yeah, man, that's to that point, man. And you can get him a million ways, you know, and that's the fun part. And something I'm going to spoil a little bit of yours too. I think you've gotten some alternate covers by just approaching artists who like you're huge fans of.
Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Artist, Mrs. Artist, I'm a huge fan of yours. Do you have any bandwidth to take on a cover?
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes they say yes, and that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point, I like to get the artists that look nothing like me. That's my favorite part of it. It's like, I don't want to have someone come in and draw relatively close to what I would do. That defeats the purpose of the alternate cover, in my opinion. It's like, I want someone to stand out from what I do and, you know, people know right away, like, oh, you didn't draw this. Who did this one? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I hate the feeling when they're too close to what I do, because then they're like, man, you did a killer job on this. And I'm like, that's not me. I didn't do that. You know, like,
exactly.
And it just makes you feel a way about it. And, yeah. So I had, so as far as superstar artists go, so like I was a huge fan of Wildstorm, in its inception over at Image Comics. So I had Brett Booth do a cover. And so, like I said, he did issue 8. And then most recently I had Eddie Nunez do the Kickstarter exclusive for issue 11, the Drawtober comic, you know, turn fully formed comic.
Yeah.
So that's two Wildstorm alums that I got. And like, for me, those are two huge gets. And it's just like, man, I love these guys. It's like, my style is somewhere around those two guys, but it's not the same. Right. So mm-hmm. like I was showing my girlfriend all the covers actually, like right before this pod. And she was talking about original art. We had gotten into traditional and digital, because I watch a lot of YouTube on the TV, and so she'll notice like, oh, hey, they're working on actual paper. How come you don't work on paper? And I was like, oh, I actually used to, blah, 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 blah. And so today I got around to showing her. It's like, oh, hey, here's all my original pages from the first seven issues, I believe. There's actual physical art for those. And then by 8, I moved to digital. So, but I showed her that I also print out covers and splash pages, and I ink those traditionally. So I actually have physical art for sale. But mm-hmm. then we got into my cover folder, which is all of the different alternate covers or commissions that I've gotten over the years. Before I was even releasing comics, I would take my first cover that I printed out on a, you know, 8.5 by 11, and I would give them that, and they would choose a character to draw, and I would come back and the commission would be done. And it, you know, so I have a bunch of commissions of the second shift characters from famous comic book artists that I can't basically do anything with, because some are under contract. Like I have pieces from Humberto Ramos, mm-hmm. who's under contract with Marvel for the last like 30 years or something. And so I have these pieces. It's like, I can't even ask him if I could use them because he's under contract. And, you know, there's a few that have lapped. Like, I got a headshot by Dustin Nguyen, and he was under contract with DC. So he's more or less freelance now. So I'm actually going to ask him if I can use it for something. You know, if he doesn't, it's not a big deal. It's something I have in my collection. But, you know, it's so cool to show her, like, all the different pieces that look nothing alike from each other. It's like, it's clear to her when we flip the page that's a completely different guy, because they mm-hmm. all just look so, so different. And even to the point with Brett Booth, she was just like, this isn't yours, right? Like, you don't draw like this. And so, but there was a hesitation there. Like, it's kind of familiar, but it's not at the same mm-hmm. time. So I do like that. And, you know, it's great for, I think for those people out there that are going to be doing their own books, it's something really to consider. You don't want to get a cover artist that looks just like your interior artist. And, you know, also if your interior artist is, you know, good, make sure you give them a cover too. Like, that's something with the first, I think, seven issues, my philosophy has changed since then. And it was, I guess, more or less because I didn't have a printer where you can do shorter print runs on alternate covers and stuff. Like, you had to do 500 in order to get the deal, right? So mm-hmm. I didn't have any alternate covers. But if you're capable and able to do this, you know, it's nice to give your interior artist that cover and then maybe give those bonus covers, the 1 in 10, the 1 in 20 or whatever, give those to your alternates, and then that's something, you know, comic shops can order up for, or you can sell at a higher amount at conventions.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, I think that brings the cover discussion to a close. I mean, we could talk about it forever. You know, there's not, you know, to summarize, it really needs to be an amazing piece that sells the book. That's the most important thing. But after that, there's not a whole lot of, you know, all bets are off. I mean, you it's your book, and I would argue that this is the greatest opportunity for you to, you know, flex the fact that it's your book. You know what I mean? Like, this is where you get to have some fun. And yeah, you're going to pay some money or you're going to take some time, but in general, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun, and you're going to get, you know, when it's all said and done, you're going to get some portfolio of people that have drawn your shit, you know, over all those years. So
yeah.
Anyway, and again, there's plenty of ways to go about it. Let's talk about some comics. Yeah. We're to the comic portion of the program. So we're here and we're going to recommend some books. It's been a while. And so you found two that you wanted to recommend, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So he thinks he found two. I'm intrigued. And I found two as well. So since I'm hosting, why don't you fire off with the first comic that you want to recommend?
Okay, so I texted you about this before the show started, and you said you think that I had already recommended them. And I talked about them so much that I might have. So I'm just going to say them real quick, and then I'm going to give you an actual one that's for sure hasn't been on the air. So it is Plastic and currently Vinyl. And the artist is Daniel Hilliard. And I'm sorry, I feel awful at the moment. I do not have the writer offhand. And I'll correct that next week. I'll make sure to tell you guys who the writer is there. But he has a very Ryan Ottley-esque style, and I'm a huge Ryan Ottley fan. So, but he has his own flair to it. It's slightly more cartoony, but there's something beautiful about those books. It is like horror comedy in a way. I think just because of his style, there's like a huge horror element, but the way he draws just kind of calms everything down, and it's a very nice balance. So it's very reminiscent of Invincible, where it's like, hey, this is a teenage superhero comic, but also he makes people's heads explode. So there's the contrast of those two things. It's very interesting. So since I might have recommended those books already, I would like to go with a oldie, but maybe for you it's a newie. It is Chew by John Layman and Rob Guillory. And this book is fantastic. Have you ever read Chew, Keith?
I have not read it, but I know what it is.
Okay, cool.
I had Lance recommended it to me a long time ago.
Okay, perfect. So the style initially wasn't my jam, but the more I read Chew, the more I was like, I can't imagine this being drawn by anyone else. And, you know, by halfway through the first volume, because I collect hardcovers, it's the Omnivore edition. If you're looking it up on Amazon or eBay or at your local comic shop, I love these hardcovers. They're about, I want to say, 10 to 12 issues, depending on the series. And I was halfway through this, and I was just like, this is great. So his style is not my normal bag. But then once I got into it, I was like, no, I was wrong. It is. I really enjoy this. There's a consistency there that I really like. A lot of background gags, which I'm a huge fan of. Like, if you read my books, I always have something going on in the background. Either it's something funny or just like little Easter eggs I like to put in. And Rob does that a lot with his books. And so for the people out there who do not know what this is, he is a detective I forgot the term that they use, and he basically, oh, a sibopath. He's a sibopath. So he basically eats something, and he can tell you the history of that thing he's eaten. So he is a detective. So sometimes he'll chew on a thumb or something like that in order to find out how the person died. So it's pretty disgusting, but it's also pretty awesome at the same time. It's actually in the same vein as Vinyl and Plastic, where it's this very cartoony style, but it's also very graphic at the same time. So it balances out very nicely.
All right, so my two, they are both, and we'll see if we do this again, when we do this again, I might go back to this convention. But I think I mentioned this episode or two ago that in the last hour of Rose City Comic Con, I walked around and I just wanted to look for indie books. That's all I wanted. I just walked Artist Alley and stopped at every table where they did a book that was remotely promising to me. And I grabbed a bunch. And so there are a couple that I read recently that I'm just like, yeah, I got to recommend these. And these are hashtag indie as fuck. So I'm really happy about that because I do owe something to the indie gods here. So what I have in my hand, I'm going to show Scott here, is a series of four books. And it's definitely like this theme. They're all white covers and they all have kind of a thing, right? Devil Skin, Witch Heart, Dollhouse, and Wolf Moon. And they are a series of four, and there might be more because they're kind of ongoing. They're spread out over some years. They're written by David Acampo, I think I'm pronouncing that right, and drawn by Chris Anderson. And they are all horror one-shots that don't really have to do with each other, but there's a thematic thing. And they're just these nifty, you know, 16-page comics, maybe something like that, that tell a nice little tale. I think they're good, man. I mean, it's fun to just get deep into the indie waters with people that are just publishing themselves, you know, which I can relate to because I did it before 215. You know, Scott does it. Like, self-publishing's badass, you know, and even though I'm on 215, it's very self-publishing-ish, right? So these books are really good, man. Again, just nice little horror things. If I were ranking them, I would say that Devil Skin and Witch Heart are the two best. But you know, they're all pretty good and they serve as like a nice cohesive unit there. So when we put these show notes up, I will give, David Acampo's Twitter or Instagram handle, whatever I can get handy. And then that way people have the opportunity to check these books out if they want, cause they're cool. They're cool one-shot horrors and, you know, nice, quick little beginning, middle, end. And you know, what you think of when you think of these quick, you know, vignette horror kind of stories.
And yeah, I think you should take a photo of those two, and then so when this issue or this episode releases, you can post it up on your Instagram stories. Yep. And people can give that a look. Those covers are very reminiscent of what I was talking about. Very stylized, yeah. Eye-catching. You know, I don't know if that's representative of what the interior art looks like or if it's just a design element.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, what's always interesting about these is the design element of Kadoja is there because Lance Pilgrim is a designer. That's his day trade, right? And I believe one of these guys is also a graphic designer. So there's a second book that I am going to recommend here. And the second book, which was also from Portland Rose City Comic Con, it's written by a guy named Caleb Palmquist, and he was the one who was working the table. It is Unicorn Vampire Hunter. So there are two issues of this. And so I'm just going to recount the conversation I had with one of my kids. I said, hey, there's this book called Unicorn Vampire Hunter. I think you'd like it because she loves unicorns. And she was like, Unicorn Vampire Hunter? Are you saying like the unicorn hunts vampires? And I'm like, yes.
That's exactly right.
And she's like, how does it kill it? And I'm like,
as a horn.
With its horn. Right? She's like, oh.
Yeah. It's like a stake that's attached to its head.
Exactly. So this is a delightful comic.
I like that cover, too. It's a very, very animated style. I really dig that. It almost looks like a Tangled, the horse in Tangled. Like, it's very nice.
Very much, yeah. And so this is, you know, it's two issues in, and it moves at a fast pace considering the amount of story that you get in those two issues. But it's got a heart. It's got a cool thing. You have a unicorn that kills vampires. Like, I'm not sure what else you need in life, much less a comic, than a unicorn that hunts vampires, you know? So, yeah, the interiors look very similar to that. They're a little bit more rough than that. That's a bit more polished version of the interior art. But yeah, man, a good time, you know? So I highly recommend that as well. Unicorn Vampire Hunter. In fact, that was a book I found out about because someone came to my table, a friend, and they were like, yeah, yeah, let me get this issue. And they're like, yeah, yeah, I just went to the Unicorn Vampire Hunter guy first, and then I came here, and I was like, what the fuck did you just say?
What was that sentence?
Yeah, yeah, just hold it. I need to. And so even when I was walking the whole floor, I'm like, where's the Unicorn Vampire Hunter guy? Right. So anyway, then I met him. We chopped it up a little bit, and yeah, man, good book. So again, both recommended. And to your point, I'll take some photos and throw some Instagram handles up when this episode airs in the show notes for people to take a look at.
Right on. I think that David Ocampo guy, he used to do a podcast with, it's one of the iFanboy guys. And he actually branched off to do his own channel. I don't know what happened there. He goes under Fuzzy Typewriter. But anyway, David Ocampo, if it's the same guy, which I think it is, because I believe he's a writer, he actually was selected. I think Marvel was doing something, Marvel or DC, they were doing something where they were searching for talent, and I heard he got picked up.
Nice.
So yeah. I don't know if anything ever came. I believe it was DC. I don't think anything ever came of it, and if it did, then I hadn't heard anything. But I figured the iFanboy guys would have mentioned it since he's kind of like iFanboy adjacent.
Yeah, but, yeah.
No, I mean, that's interesting. I want to
based
check
on meeting
out.
Him. Yeah, based on meeting him a few weeks ago, it looks like he kind of just went back into the indie world because he's cranking out a whole lot of product. I think I bought 3, maybe 4. Different stories of his.
Oh, right.
And I like that because, you know, that goes back to something I've talked about before about the rebranding as I look to branch out into not just being a human being that writes Kadoja, but rather Keith Foster, a person who writes Kadoja among other stories. You know, it's cool to walk by writers that have multiple properties and it's like, that's them. Hey, this is me. Here's the things I write. So very cool to see. And David Ocampo was one of those dudes for sure.
Nice.
So,
My second rec is also an oldie but goodie. It is one of my favorite titles. I heard of it. I took a couple of years to start reading it, and once I did, I felt like an idiot for taking as long as I did, and that is Fear Agent by Rick Remender, Tony Moore, and Jerome Opeña. Jerome Opeña, for quite a while, was one of my favorite new artists. It was like him and Lemuel Yu, like they were my shit. I discovered Jerome Opeña and Rick Remender. They did Uncanny X-Force. So that was the first time I ever read anything or seen anything by either of those guys. And after I discovered them on that book, I was like, what else have these guys done? And they're like, oh, they did another book together. It's called Fear Agent. And I was like, I don't know if I like that title. And so I took a little bit for me to read them. And as soon as I started reading it, I had to have the hardcovers. And so I have these two omnibuses. They were put out by Dark Horse, and they're freaking ginormous.
Good Lord.
Yeah, man. Yeah, these things are fucking huge. And I don't know how much they go for. I know the first volume, it sold out for a while, and it like shot up in price, but I think they did a second printing, so it might have calmed that down. So if you guys have the opportunity, go check out Fear Agent. It's basically a drunk space cowboy. And it's pretty awesome. So the art is amazing. The story is amazing. After this book, I followed Rick Remender wherever he went. And so he did other stories like Deadly Class, Black Science, Low.
All right, cool, man. So that's awesome. So that's the end of our book recommendations. So with that, we did mention it earlier in the episode, man. But shout out your Instagram handles again.
You can find me at Scott Lost on Twitter and Instagram. And that's SEOTTLOST. And Facebook.com/ScottLost.
Yeah, man. And for me, I am Keith_Decibel. That is me doing things and not necessarily Kadoja, although it might overlap with Kadoja. And then I'm also at Kadoja Kaiju, one word. And that is all things Kadoja and giant monsters.
Was Kadoja taken, or you were just like, I want people to know this is about kaiju?
let me think about this. I think we were at Kadoja or something like that and changed it. I think what happened was we were at Kadoja. We had that old Kadoja.com site. It expired. We didn't want to have any kind of relation with it, so we changed it up. So Kadoja Kaiju. And that's one of the websites, right? You know that it's KadojaKaiju.com as well.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'd have to look back because I do think that we've been Kadoja Kaiju for a very long time. So it's also possible that my memory just sucks and we've been Kadoja Kaiju from the jump.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then you could find my books at accidentalaliens.com, Second Shift, The Tale of Minimum Wage Workers During the Day and Superheroes at Night, Wanderers of Melisandre, Anthropomorphic Dinosaurs versus Humans, and I also have stories in Tales from the Mothership, as well as the Accidental Alien Anthologies. There's 2017, 18, and 19. 2017 is sold out in the physical copies, but there are digitals, and physical copies of 2018 and 19 still exist, so give those a look at accidentalaliens.com.
Yeah, man. And for me, my website is keithrfoster.com. There are some blog posts, there is some Kadoja information, and there is a Kadoja store. And there's going to be more coming. In fact, I was just talking release schedule with Three Protectors, and it looks like Three Protectors will be in front of people in the first quarter of 2022. So I'm super excited about that. I mean, the book is pretty much done, but we're just doing some things, and it'll be here before you know it. So... and more stuff coming after that, because there's another product of mine that's going to be on the release schedule for Comic Company at the end of 2022. So very exciting stuff. In addition to Kadoja, which is just going to keep on coming out in issues as we work our way through the final arc. So the music's been pumping.
Yeah, we got two more things.
There's more, bitch.
There's more. Don't forget, if you want to talk to us about the things that are more or stuff that we talked about in this episode, go to makingcomicspodcast@gmail.com. Send us an email there. Let us know how we're doing. If there's anything we haven't tackled that you want us to tackle, we can do that. Just shoot us an email, or you can hit us up on our social medias.
Yeah, and then, of course, there is the good old 5-star rating that you can give us on Apple Podcasts. I've mentioned it before. It helps us a great deal. So... if you have a spare minute and want to throw a review our way, a very, very nice review with some very, very nice words, we would appreciate it, and it's only going to help spread the word. I would argue that's the single thing that spreads the word the most, simply punching in a nice rating on Apple Podcasts. So again, to those of you that have done it, thank you. We appreciate it. And with that, the music's been bumping, so we are going to ride on out here, and I will see you next week, my man.
All right, dude. Another good episode. I will talk to you soon. Yuri, yuri.